welcome everyone to the Internet Work Expert CCNA Audio Bootcamp. My name is Anthony Sequeira, and I'm going to be walking you through everything it is you need to know in these recordings regarding CCNA certification. Remember, the CCNA certification is a middle layer certification in Cisco's certification tracks. We begin with the CCENT certification, and then this course addresses the second level, the CCNA level of certification, and then we have CCNP and CCIE certification levels. If you're interested in any training products that relate to CCNA or any of the other Cisco certification levels, be sure to visit our website at INE.com. That's IndigoNancyEcho.com. Simple as that. And you'll find information about other great products for your Cisco certification needs. Now, in this first module, we're going to talk all about VLANs here in the CCNA Audio Bootcamp. VLANs are going to be the topic, and we're going to start with advanced switching technologies in this particular lesson. It's interesting. The lesson is called Advanced Switching Technologies, but really, these aren't all that advanced, what we're going to talk about. As you progress through Cisco certification, you're going to learn all about much more advanced technologies that we can do on our Cisco switches. But hey, you got to start somewhere. And from a CCNA level perspective, I guess some of these technologies, I guess we'll go ahead and humor Cisco and we'll consider them as advanced. By the way, for those of you, and I would assume that's everyone that's listening to my voice, for those of you that have completed your entry-level Cisco certification training, so for those of you that are currently CCENT certified, all of this lesson that you're going to hear is going to be review. So this will be a complete review for all of you that have completed your CCENT training. The first bit of review that we have is regarding how you're going to connect one of your Catalyst switches to a personal computer so that you can configure the Catalyst switch. Do you remember the name of the cable that you are going to use to connect to your switch? In fact, it's the same cable you would use to connect to a Cisco router, for example, in order to configure it. Yeah, the cable that you're going to use is called a rollover cable. A rollover cable is going to connect to a serial port on your personal computer, and then you can go ahead and connect the other end of that device using the registered jack plastic end. You're going to connect to the particular Cisco device itself. So the rollover cable, and these cables are flat. They're typically flat, so they kind of really stand out. You wouldn't confuse one of these cables with an Ethernet cable, for instance. It looks like an Ethernet cable that's been run over by a really large truck. So the rollover cable is typically flat, and really you're able to identify it easily, and that's how you're going to connect to the Cisco device. So it's a rollover cable connected to the console port, and that's typically labeled on your Cisco device, typically with the letters CON. So the console port is labeled CON, and that's what you're going to connect to on the switch with this rollover cable in order to make a session and configure that device. Now, speaking of cabling, you also need to know for the CCNA the difference between your straight-through and your crossover Ethernet cables. Specifically, when would you use a straight-through Ethernet cable versus a crossover cable? Well, the good news is this is pretty darn easy for us to remember. A straight-through cable is going to be used to connect unlike devices. We just need to remember that. A straight-through cable is going to be used for unlike devices. So a great example of where we'd use a straight-through cable is to connect a PC to the local switch. to the local layer 2 switch. This is how we get on the network. We plug in our PC to the layer 2 switch using one of these straight through cables. Great. Another use would be a router in a layer 2 switch. They are certainly different devices, and as such, we use a straight through Ethernet cable to connect them. How about a PC to a hub? Yes, of course, we're also going to use a straight through cable in order to connect these unlike devices. So, anytime we have two devices that are obviously not like each other, it's going to be a straight through cable that we use in order to connect them. So when we need a crossover cable, think about devices that are identical or at least nearly identical in function. Now, a layer 2 switch to a layer 2 switch, well, they're obviously exactly alike. So, of course, it would be a crossover cable. A hub connected to a hub or a router connected to a router, those devices are exactly alike, so we would use a crossover cable. Now, it's interesting, a hub and a layer 2 switch, they're definitely not identical devices. There are key distinctions between how a hub works and a layer 2 switch works, but remember, those are similar enough that we need a crossover cable. So one kind of exception to the like device rule is a layer 2 switch and a hub. We are going to connect those with a crossover cable. So just think of the hub and the layer 2 switch being close enough in function that we need a crossover cable. Another exception that throws students is a PC and a router. To plug a PC directly into a router, you need a crossover cable. Now, I know what you're thinking. Anthony, those aren't like devices at all. They're not even close. A PC and a router aren't even close in function. Well, be careful about that. You might not know it, but your PC can route traffic. A Windows PC, as an example, can be configured to route packets between two network cards. So, when it comes to the PC and the router, they both have the capability to route traffic, and that is why we're going to use a crossover cable when it comes to connecting those devices. That's an easy way to remember that, that since both the PC and the router can route, we will use a crossover cable. Another sequence of facts that we need to recall from our CCENT training is how Ethernet stations can communicate with each other on the network. What technology controls how devices can all access the media at the same time and we not have chaos in the communications? You probably remember that the technology we're talking about is carrier sense multiple access with collision detection. That's right, carrier sense multiple access collision detection, also known as CSMA-CD. Remember how CSMA-CD works. Before a station goes to send data on the shared broadcast medium of Ethernet, the station will listen. And if it hears the line is clear, it will transmit. Now, one of the challenges with this technology is that a station will listen, hear that the line is clear, and then transmit right at the same moment another station is transmitting. And when this occurs, we have what is called a collision. Certainly not as devastating as a collision can be on the railway or the freeway or even in airspace, but the collision is still a bad thing. What happens when the collision occurs The collision is detected, and then the stations are going to wait for a random period of time, and then the stations will go ahead and retransmit. So one of the things we need to know is what happens when a collision occurs in a CSMA-CD network. Well, there'll be a random time period of waiting and then a retransmission. Something else that we need to know for our CCNA certification is the fact that hubs are pretty useless to us today in our network environments. The reason why we pick on hubs is the fact that all they really do for us is extend our LAN segments. They bring more and more devices into what we call a collision domain. So the problem with a hub is it makes larger and larger collision domains. We want something to replace a hub, a layer 2 switch, because it makes smaller collision domains. It's kind of ironic. A switch, or at least it sounds awkward, a switch reduces collisions by creating additional collision domains. We call this, as you probably recall, we call it micro-segmentation, a switch's creation of these smaller collision domains in order to eliminate or reduce, at the very least, collisions in our network. So, hubs make larger collision domains. Layer 2 switches create many more very small collision domains. As a matter of fact, the ultimate environment for us is one in where we just exclusively use layer 2 switches to get individuals onto the network. And we have one device, maybe two devices, if we have IP phones in our environment, we have at the most two devices plugged into the particular switch. If we have a phone and a user PC plugged in to each and every port of the switches, and we have the using of something we call a voice VLAN, we can run our environment in full duplex mode. And in full duplex mode, we will not have collisions, and we will have a much more efficient use of the bandwidth in our network infrastructure. So that's our goal, to replace all of our hubs with layer 2 switches, to give each and every device its very own micro-segmented collision domain, and we will eliminate collisions through the use of that topology, and we'll get to achieve full duplex, efficient communications in the infrastructure. One of the exercises that you should go through when it comes to this discussion is just think about a device and think about how many collision domains, and for that matter, how many broadcast domains that device creates. So let's think about it. A hub creates one big collision domain and one big broadcast domain, and a layer 2 switch creates a small collision domain for each and every device. Now, a switch by default creates just one big broadcast domain, but we can manipulate this through the creation of VLANs, of virtual local area networks. So as we add VLANs, we add smaller broadcast domains. So the switch really is a best-of-breed technology. It can micro-segment, creating those small collision domains, and it can also create many small broadcast domains through the virtual local area networks. I think it's important for us to keep in mind that by default, it is going to be just a single broadcast domain the Layer 2 switch creates, however. Now, how does a switch really operate? How does it function behind the scenes, if you will? Well, the switch will take in a frame, and it will look up the destination MAC address in that frame in its MAC address table. It will look inside this MAC address table, and it will see what port it needs to forward the traffic out to get to that MAC address. Notice this is distinctly unique from a hub, which will take in the frame and spit it out all of the ports. In fact, an old way to refer to hubs is a bit spitter. A hub is nothing more than a bit spitter. It takes in bits and spits them out all the other ports. Not very sophisticated whatsoever. So a switch is going to do a lookup of the destination MAC address and forward the frame based on the MAC address table. Now, if the destination is on the receiving port, so in other words, the frame comes in and the switch realizes, oh, well, who you wanted to talk to is on your own port, then the frame is simply filtered from being sent anywhere. If it's for another port on the switch, the frame forwards it out that port and doesn't send it out any other port. And then, of course, if the destination MAC address isn't in the switch's MAC address table, the frame will be flooded out all ports except the port it was received on. And this is to ensure that the frame gets to the recipient. Now, what happens in the case where we don't have anything in the MAC address table? Well, and by the way, none of the stations have communicated with each other yet. Well, of course, what host A is going to do in order to communicate with host B is it's going to prepare a UDP transmission in order to find out the name resolution information for host B. Host A will check its ARP table for the MAC address of host B. It doesn't find an entry. It sends out an ARP request, an address resolution protocol request, and it broadcasts this. And it says, hey, does anyone know the MAC address for host B? I have host B's IP address. Maybe it got this from DNS, for example. And the IP address is, let's say, 192.168.1.2. So this switch will receive the frame, and it will say, okay, I don't know. I don't have the destination MAC address you're looking for, but I am going to record something. I did just get a little more intelligent. I know switch A's MAC address. Isn't this interesting? Or host A, excuse me. Isn't this interesting? Host A is sending an ARP out on the network, and it wants the MAC address for host B, and the switch is using this, and it's getting a little bit more intelligent, and it's recording the MAC address for host A. Now, when switch A receives this frame and takes that information and records its MAC address, it's now sending that ARP out all of the ports, isn't it? Because the ARP, remember, is a broadcast. So the switch is going to go ahead and flood that broadcast ARP request out all the ports. Host B responds to the ARP address, ARP broadcast rather, and it says, hey, I'm host B. I'm who you're looking for, and here's my MAC address. Now, the switch looks at that response, and it just got smarter. It now knows the MAC address for host B, and it populates its MAC address table with that information. Now, also, the switch has from the initial ARP broadcast, it knows the MAC address of host A. So for the ARP response, it's able to forward it efficiently right to host A. And now all subsequent transmissions between host A and host B in our example are filtered very efficiently by the fully educated switch. So it's pretty unique, isn't it? While the devices are trying to discover their name resolution information through the ARP process, the switch is getting intelligent by eavesdropping on those messages. A great way to say it is that the switch is transparently learning this information, and this transparent learning is exactly how switches get their name as to transparent switches. Okay. Notice that whenever the switch receives a broadcast or a multicast frame, by default, as you would expect them to, they flood that frame by default out all ports except the port where they received it. And you know, the exact technical reason why they behave this way is that the switch looks at the destination MAC address of this frame, And the destination MAC address is FFFFF. It's a MAC address that consists of all Fs, F as in Foxtrot. This MAC address, this broadcast MAC address, it's never going to be in the MAC address table associated with a particular port. So this is the reason why these broadcast or multicast frames are flooded out onto the network by default. So this is our first look at some advanced switching technologies, at least advanced as far as CCNA level goes, and this should have been review for all of you from our CCENT training. Listen to it a few times, obviously, if you feel you need to review all this information and have it all down pat. And then when you're ready, of course, you can head up to our website, www.ine.com, or simply ine.com. Head up to our website and check out practice exam questions, which you can find in our blog site. Our blog is located at blog.ine.com. Lots of great resources that are going to be available through our website at ine.com. So check those out. Well, I'm so glad you joined us for Lesson 1 of Module 1 here in our CCNA Audio Bootcamp. What's coming up next for you in our audio lessons is a look at virtual local area networks in depth. Remember, this chapter is called VLANs. Our next lesson is going to be all about those virtual local area networks. We alluded to them in this lesson. We said VLANs were a way in which we could make multiple broadcast domains available on our Cisco Catalyst switches. So I hope you'll join us in the next lesson where we take an in-depth look at VLANs.